This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Bonnie North. One of the fastest-growing areas of healthcare is what's known as precision medicine. DNA and other factors are used by doctors to develop targeted and personalized therapies for patients. The director of the Genomic Sciences and Precision Medical Center at the Medical College of Wisconsin says because of these capabilities, a healthcare revolution is underway. Dr. Raul Urrutia has been running the center for about 2 years. He recently sat down for a conversation with WUWM's innovation reporter Chuck Kornbach to talk about the promise and potential challenges for precision medicine. Urrutia began with his definition of the term.
Precision medicine takes into consideration then the differences in your genetic makeup, your blueprint, your exposure to the environment, like environmental toxicants, pollutants, because if you are potentially of a different ethnicity that I am, you may be reacting to a particular environmental pollutant in a different manner, and particularly to a drug. A wonderful program that we have is called pharmacogenomics, which basically is how your genetic blueprint that we're able to put together with that computer and with the sequencers, as we call the machines that analyze your molecules, your genes. We put it together and we can actually predict what drugs are going to probably save your life and which drugs might hurt you. Should we change the doses or we should stop with the drugs?
You've been here for about 2 years. Has the concentrations of study areas changed or focused on a particular thing?
So when I came here, we opened several programs. Some of them are like the pharmacogenomic program. There is another program called the microbiome program, which is basically we studied all the organisms that colonize you everywhere. And it turns out that we know by far much less about those organisms than we know about the space or the sea. And yet, for instance, they can influence your metabolism, and there is data to indicate that they could potentially affect your mood. Can you imagine thinking that you are at some moment, your state of alertness, for instance, could be influenced exactly by your microbiome? Another program that we have, and is, I will say, one of our flagship programs is the cancer genomic program, the cancer precision medicine program. With our growth of the cancer center, our focus on bringing the latest in cancer precision medicine is at the highest.
And what types of cancer in particular are you targeting?
We want to be as inclusive as we can. I mean, we cannot think about one cancer not to be taken care of. In fact, precision medicine is sometimes about a single individual. It's personalized. You may have something in your genome that makes you uniquely sensitive to a particular type of therapy. So for us, a single person with cancer, or whatever cancer, is very important. Obviously, that there are larger cancers and some which are more accessible to this type of management. There are cancers that are very sensitive to immunotherapy, for instance. They carry a particular genomic makeup, and we can identify them with our assays and with our computers, and we can actually predict that the person may be sensitive to immunotherapy. It's another thing that precision medicine is changing, which is that now cancers are switching from being just organ-based to molecular types. In other words, they are becoming to be defined, but what they have in their genomic makeup that will determine a particular outcome to a precise medicine. Triple negative breast cancer. What it's telling you is just, it's no breast cancer. It's a triple negative cancer, which it means is that it's negative for three type of therapies that it could have.
Another area which your center has grown has dealt with trauma and epigenomics. Trauma, people know about. Epigenomics is what, and what is the connection?
Now, this is interesting because the definition of epigenomic is inheritance, independence of the composition of the DNA. We were told that we inherit through the DNA, but there are proteins that surround the DNA that actually also determine inheritance. And not only they determine inheritance, but they can be marked by the environment. In other words, they are receptors of environmental insults that the body can get. And then, for instance, you can have the silencing of the genes that protects you against a particular cancer, maybe because the environment marked those proteins that are also able to turn that gene off, but yet the sequence of the gene is not altered. What is altered is the regulation around it. And this science is remarkable because it can explain, for instance, all the patterns of genomic variations more than genetic can explain. It can explain the different shape of patterns in fish and in butterflies and in flowers as much as it can determine the pattern of your heart. In other words, epigenomic is on top of genomic. It's between the genome, which is like a blueprint, and epigenomic is like building the house. Then you start seeing life in 3D. So we are able to translate what that gene instruction is into what you are and how the environment has affected you and whether you might pass it to the next generation as well.
And where does trauma come in?
So imagine what trauma could be. Are you more sensitive to a second clotting event than to a first clotting event? Is there a memory there? Could there be epigenomics? PTSD, for instance, what is a memory that keep on coming, right? And so we are exploring this science of epigenomics as a mechanism of memory for diseases to occur. And that is where comes our studies at the level of trauma.
And so you could prescribe something for someone affected by PTSD?
It turns out that we have not done yet the study on therapeutics, but we study a particular molecule. It's an epigenomic regulator, you will regulate your epigenome, and it's responsible of anxiety. And there are drugs that are becoming to be tested in the laboratory in order to see how they are working with anxiety and memories and PTSD. This is an area of very active investigation.
At least one of the online cancer support groups suggested that precision medicine is still at the clinical trial level, that it's not yet helping the average patient that might not be part of a clinical trial. Is that a fair concern, or is that not reality?
I think that is what we would like to defeat. The idea that you are a patient and we take care of your health. I mean, what we would like to give you the message is that you have your genome, so you now can demand the medicine that is in agreement with your genetic makeup and your lifestyle. So it is available. Obviously, that at the level of cancer, some cancers have already guidelines for precision medicine intervention. For instance, let me give you an example, a cancer which I study very closely, which is pancreatic cancer. This year, the guidelines is that any patient that comes with pancreatic cancer should be offered genomic sequencing. And that is because we are finding that 8 to 10% of those individuals had a genetic predisposition that you could read it in the genome. We are in this revolutionary moment. This is the science of the moment. This is the science that your kids are going to want. In fact, it's not only precision medicine, but how the system will move with precision medicine, because the hospitals will have to be modified in order to move information from one hospital to the other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what we call data-driven healthcare delivery system. Now, our center is at the cross of that development. We are investing in significant amount of resources in data science and advancement of data science and the interpretation of new data, medical data, and how to transmit it, including testing the applications in artificial intelligence and so on.
Meantime, if I go to a doctor who's 40 or 50 miles from this center, is that doctor going to know enough about precision medicine, or are you asking them to refer the patient to a center such as this?
I think that you are absolutely touching on a very important point that requires an answer and a comment. The answer is that the doctor would have to refer it to our healthcare system so that the person can be seen. But the person could obtain blood and send it here, and we will do the assay, so the person doesn't necessarily have to be here. But the comment is that maybe the problem is not only the education of the citizen in the area of precision medicine, but we have to educate our doctors as well. You know, our center, in partnership with the Institute of Health and Equity, are developing new careers, careers that we think are going to be essential for the new practice of precision medicine, careers as genetic counselors, which are more trained, not only in advising the patient this time, but also advising the doctors, right? I mean, something that it will change is that we will practice in team rather than the isolated doctor. Obviously, that telemedicine is being incorporated by MCW, and telemedicine is part of precision medicine, if you will.
And on a similar note, a pharmacist, is there also more training and underway to connect with the pharmacist, the people that actually deliver, hand the drug to the customer?
I must admit that it's a pleasure for me to actually answer intelligent questions. I mean, we are working in very close partnership with the School of Pharmacy. And the School of Pharmacy, we are providing knowledge based in the area of pharmacogenomics, but it's the commitment of the School of Pharmacy to have a primary focus on pharmacogenomics. And we have a pharmacogenomics task force. So we are discussing on how we are going to assemble the training and the distribution of the pharmacists, and also how to train them in the school. And yes, pharmacists, just like genetic counselors, are going to be key. But other careers are going to come up. For instance, the genomic analyst. We have to have genomic analysts in the hospital. Now they're in the center, but I mean, they will become more adept to analyzing data in real time, close to the hospital. New devices that are coming up, because precision medicine is not only about genomics, it's about implantables, it's also wearables, it is portables. And so we are having new analysts of different type of data. So we believe that the new healthcare system cannot be built any longer just on the shoulders purely of doctors.
So let me ask a few questions about the public. Polls show the majority of the people still don't understand what precision medicine is. Some people may have difficulty understanding genes and genomics. What do you do about that?
We need champions of education. We need journalism. We need contact with the population. We need leaders in the community. We need schools to do a better job. We need scientists to just get down from where they are and open, like we have done, open the centers. The center is open to school. They can come, contact us, and visit us. We will be talking to them about what is genomics. So I think that, like the discovery of antibiotics, right? I mean, it takes a while until it picks up. But I think is now the duty of everybody to start moving this information around.
Now, one part of genomics has been a lot of studies, a lot of articles these days about gene editing and the CRISPR baby. And is that anything like that going on here or will be going on here? Or is that just a totally different area of research?
No, we have gene editing, but no gene editing in human. I give you my personal opinion, Dr. Raul Urrutia. I strongly believe that is unethical, but we have to get together and think. Just like when we discovered radiation and we had to sit down and think what we were going to do with that energy. And so we have to think and we have to test. Now, gene editing is a daily use technique in science. In our center, we edit, for instance, we make models of diseases. We edit rats and we edit mice in order to imitate the disease of a child, for instance, and see whether we can find a therapy or something like that. So it's used in research all the time. Another application that has is that if you can edit a mosquito, for instance, and they have been edited to know to reproduce, there is a way to potentially fight malaria. And I would say again, I'm not an environmental scientist. I will not know truly on the implementation of such of approach, but certainly holds promise. I mean, like anything else, I think that there are as many weapons today in the hands of a scientist in terms of to do things as they could be in the hands of any person, I guess. And I think that I strongly believe that with 6 to 8 billion inhabitants in the world, if we were bad people, we would not exist. And so I have the hope that we are going to find the solution. Currently, gene editing here, MCW, only for research. We certainly, I as a scientist, discourage the use of gene editing beyond the research arena.
Dr. Raul Urrutia is the director of the Genomic Sciences and Precision Medical Center at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He spoke with WUWM's innovation reporter, Chuck Kornbach.